طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح، طفلة.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly broadcast of news, analysis, commentary, and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's continuing occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program features the Palestinian narrative, the Palestinian voice, that is too often missing in the presentation of news and analysis in the mainstream media. This is your host, John Roberts. Israel has passed a controversial new nation-state law that's sparking both celebration and fierce debate over the very nature of Israel itself. The law does three big things. One, it states that the rights to exercise national self-determination in Israel is unique to the Jewish people. Two, it establishes Hebrew as Israel's official language and downgrades Arabic, a language widely spoken by Arab Israelis, to a, quote, special status. Three, it establishes Jewish settlements as a national value and mandates that the state will labor to encourage and promote its establishment and development. To the 20% of the Israeli population who are Palestinian, it further solidifies that Israel is truly an apartheid state. This week we feature a Palestinian pushback. Jafar Farah, director of the Masawa Center, which monitors and promotes Arabic rights in Israel, and clinical psychologist Nabila Espanioli, a feminist activist who founded the Al Tafula Women's Center in Nazareth, addressed the new apartheid law at the Harvard Law School, and This Week in Palestine was there to record it. Here is their response to a law that negates the very existence of the Palestinian people.
Saeed, good evening.
Good evening. Good evening.
I don't want to say that I'm happy to see only friends that I didn't see it for 20 years, but I would like to thank everybody. So everybody knows you, huh? But also to thank Nadim and the friends of Mada and everybody that was involved in organizing this meeting. We are here for the last 2 weeks, so we are a little bit exhausted from going around and speaking about the situation and the reality of the Palestinian community in Israel. But I think in every meeting, we get new thoughts and new ways to act. And we are action organization, action-oriented. We are not a think tank, and we need always to find ways to change the reality and challenge the reality that we face. So for the last 2 weeks, we were here to advocate for the rights of the Palestinian Arab community in Israel, which is, in the bigger context, is the context of also the Palestinian tragedy and the Palestinian crisis in general. We, Palestinians in the state of Israel, we are part of the Palestinian people, of course, and we are part of the struggle to end the occupation and to end the Palestinian tragedy, which also include, of course, being one of the nations that still suffer from refugees and living as refugees. So for the first week, we have been around the UN and in New York. It wasn't happy, especially the part to see how the Arabs are fighting each other in front of the UN, so the Qatarians against the Saudis. But at least we came as fresh and good news in this sense, because we, the Palestinian community inside Israel, we are not planning to run for any presidency. We can't. So. But actually, the good news that we are, and at least in the Palestinian community in Israel, we are the only Palestinians for the last 20 years, 15 years at least, that can elect, and we have political leadership that have been elected. This is the only Palestinian group that have the chance to elect political leaders. And we just came from Brussels a month ago, meetings with Mogherini and with the leadership of 28 member states. And we have been in Washington, D.C. to try to see, you know, your elected leaders, how they think and what they think that can do. You are not happy. So we share frustration. No, actually, the feeling was in D.C. that there is some good atmosphere. I hope that we can share this good atmosphere. You know, 40 members of the Congress that dare to sign a call to end this tragedy of children in detention. 100 members of Congress that are were brave to sign also a call to give the money, the allocation to UNRWA. So in this sense, and you know, we have a soon election, and still people were brave to sign calls that support human rights, and this is something that we don't see it usually. So in this sense, there is a good feeling around, and we are here to call you, go ahead. You know, usually Jewish Americans, especially from the left, they like to come and to call us, go and vote. In every election, we have like many Jewish Americans with money that they come and tell us, go and vote as the Palestinians inside Israel. So this time we decide to come here and to call the Arab Americans. Which file, to whom they should vote?
We have some good people to vote for now.
Yes, it depends on what they tell Bob. In any case, during our meetings in Washington, and we need your help here also. We met with members of Congress and senators and staffers, almost 30 people, good people. I think the bad ones didn't want to meet with us. But the main issue that we were talking about was the Jewish Nation State law, the new law that have been approved in the Knesset. This is the main issue that we raised. And actually, we were happy to see also that more and more Jewish American organizations were brave finally to talk about the fact that Israel is going, if it's not already today, is going to apartheid regime, not only in the West Bank and Gaza Strip, but also inside the Green Line. And we will not be happy if this apartheid regime will be able to work for long term. You know, we already 50 years of occupation, and we don't think that we should get used to the fact that the Palestinian community in Israel will suffer from systematic discrimination, not only through 35 laws. So it's already we have 35 laws. They didn't really need this basic law, but they were looking for ways actually to kill our dream, in the way that Martin Luther King was talking about the dream, to kill the dream of the Palestinian community to become equals once. Okay? So this is the purpose, because when it comes to the law, and I don't know how much, do you know what I'm talking about? If you don't know, there's copies of the law behind, we can distribute it if somebody can take the law and our paper also again about the law, so you can know what we talk about. The law is very simple law. It says Israel is the Jewish state actually, but beyond that, Israel is the land of Israel, is the historical land of Israel. So we don't talk actually about the Green Line. So just to put you in the picture, okay, the land, Article 1, the land of Israel is the historical homeland of the Jewish people. We are not there as a Palestinian minority, not as a Palestinians in general. The state of Israel, of course, have to exercise national self-determination. The state of Israel is unique only for the Jewish people, actually. Of course, when it comes to the symbols of the state, is, you know, don't take into consideration the fact that we are there. The capital of the state is Jerusalem, complete. Okay, so we don't need Obama. It's clear that the Jerusalem is complete and the capital of the state united. The language, you know, already today, the Arabic language is not, it's official language. It's one of the two official languages in the state of Israel. But if you go practically to the Knesset, for example, where they create laws, there is no translation, simultaneous translation of the debates, there is no simultaneous translation of the laws are not translated. So in practically, the Arabic language has been weak all over the years, since 70 years. I think in the last 50 years, it was worse, the situation was worse. I think in the first 20 years, there was much more will to translate decisions, government decisions, even laws, but in the last 30, 40 years, there is almost no translation of legislation. But, you know, this is not a law that we are, the downgrade of the Arabic language will have an impact much more on the Jewish community than on us. You know, if you take Nabila, for example, Nabila, the main thing that she did in the last 20 years was women issues, but also children literature. So since we have been isolated inside the Green Line, inside the until 67, we didn't have access to children literature. But I will leave this part to Nabila to talk about it. I will talk about TV and TV productions. You know, if I was raised as a children to go to and to bring the Yedioth Ahronot newspaper to enable my father to read the news or my father to read the newspaper, and there was one or two channels, today there is 1,000 channels in Israel. But there wasn't any channel that produced content from the Palestinian community inside Israel. So actually you went to the TVs and you have satellites. You have every small group in the Middle East that have channels, but we can't have channel TV channel. So in 2015, finally, I took off from Musawa and we started to establish the first independent Arab TV station. But today, if my kids want to see programs in TV, so they don't have to see anymore. So there is any more Israeli TVs. So actually, there is disengagement from the Arab community. The Arab community, you know, like the certain point, I went to the regular to the Knesset and to the Channel 2, to the whole council, and I told them, you know, if you don't want to produce Arabic content in the public channels in Israel, so it will be the last meeting that we will hold, because in 2005 we went to the Supreme Court and we said there is no Arabic content that is produced in the public channels in Israel. So they told us something like, okay, you know, it's not important, it will, you know, the Arab community, 20% of the population are not important to be seen in the Israeli TVs, so we want to establish TV stations. So we have today at least two Arabic TV stations that are producing content. One is funded by the Palestinian Authority and one is funded by the Arab private sector. But you can't get public funding to produce. But you know, the impact of this law will be on the Jewish community itself. The Jewish community itself have to decide they want to live in the Middle East, which is the Arabic language, is part of the language of this region, or they want to keep isolating themselves. You know what? I don't care if the Secret Service will have less qualified people that will look after us. So I don't think that we will be the ones, you know, like there was many debate, many talks about the downgrade of the Arabic language. I think the strength of the Arabic language is our responsibility. I don't trust the state of Israel to take care that the Israel will become, for example, multilingualistic country. If you compare the status of the Arabic language with the Russian language, for example, language of 1 million immigrants, you can understand that there they have not only regulations but also practices that Russian is actually very strong and more strong than Arabic language in many private and public institutions. So one of the laws that, you know, try to affect actually achievements of the civil rights movement in Israel was the law to enable Israel to make segregation in housing. Now that's not new news. That's not news at all. Because since the establishment of the State of Israel, the kibbutzim, which everybody knows here, are not willing to accept Arabs. They vote for the left, they vote for Meretz and the Labour Party, but yes, still there is no members of the kibbutzim, that Arab members of the kibbutzim.
Used to vote.
Yeah, okay, they used to vote. But in any case, since the establishment of the State of Israel until today, there is more than 600 Jewish settlements that have been built inside the Green Line. All of them are places for the Jewish population. So when Adala or ACRI or any human rights organization went to the Supreme Court in the past, we were willing to convince the Supreme Court to make the balance between Jewish state and democracy, Jewish state and services. For example, when our human rights organizations went to the court with the issue of language, the court said in the balance between the Jewish state and service, not identity, service, we will give service. So we will order the cities of Haifa and the cities of Yaffa and Tel Aviv to add Arabic to the street signs. So it's not identity issue. Okay? And the whole debate, it took years of a debate in the Supreme Court. The whole debate about the identity issue and the right issue, do we have the right to practice our linguistic rights, it was assigned, and in the end it became much more service Supreme Court decision than identity and principle issue related to our right to practice our language and our identity in the public space. The same happened with us when we went to the Supreme Court with the culture rights. Less than 5% of the allocation that the Minister of Culture allocate to Arab organizations, to Arab cultural institutions and productions, goes to productions in Arabic. Less than 5%. So in the end, we went to the court, and the court said something like, you know what? You know, this is like public money. What you want us to decide who deserves to get money for cinema productions or theater or etc.? So in this sense, the Supreme Court was very sensitive when it came to take decisions if Israel is a Jewish state or not. And the Supreme Court went, you know, even in family unification, there is a temporary law that was approved in 2003. Since then, they extend this law almost every year. And when we went as human rights organizations to the court and said, look guys, you know, it's family unification. People that are citizens of the state of Israel fall in love, mistake. Okay, they fall in love with Palestinians from the occupied territories. They want to live together. Give them the right to have family unification process. It's not immediate one. So the court said, no, there is security reasons. Today with this law, there is no need for security reasons. And the changes in the Supreme Court, the whole discussion that is taking place now in the U.S. about the nomination of Supreme Court judges, you know, it had been done in Israel. The settlers' organizations in Israel took over the Supreme Court. You know, it's not the right wing or the center right. It's the right wing settlers' representatives, Ayelet Shaked, that is leading the process of nominating judges that affiliated with totally the right wing, not only right wing, but even settlers, to be part of the Supreme. And the segregation on housing that is part of this law, our friends in one of the human rights organizations, I think it was ACRI, went to the Supreme Court and said, you know, Qa'dan family want to be members of a new settlement, Harish. And Supreme Court, after years of discussion, they said, you can't prevent them from doing that. It was achievement of the civil rights movement. So now it's possible to do it. And if we will go back to that Supreme Court, probably the Supreme Court will say, no. There is a basic law that says clearly that you have to encourage Jewish settlements and you have to encourage and to give the... You know, it's not only about encouragement of segregation inside Israel. I have to pay to subsidize Jewish Americans. According to this law, we, the Palestinian citizens of the State of Israel, we should pay taxes not only to implement the occupation in the occupied territories, but also to subsidize Jewish Americans if they need any help. Today, we subsidize them without help. You know, there is ministry. No, people think that only Jewish Americans send money. The Israeli government is investing in Aliyah, is investing in these whole programs to bring Jews and to protect Jews and etc. You know, maybe I can understand it when it comes to Ethiopia. I can't understand it why, you know, the Israeli government have to convince Jews in the U.S. not to marry non-Jews, for example. Something that I think there was a big issue about it. I think the NIF was very active on that. But there was, for a while, a campaign to prevent mixed marriages between Jewish American, Jews abroad and non-Jews. Imagine, you know, the right You know, actually, this law is very, you know, like you make a law, the first thing that you make in any legislation, you say, you know, what you mean, you know, what you mean with the Jewish people, what you mean. It's the Reform Jewish movement, the ultra-Orthodox, who's Jew? This is a question that haven't been identified in Israel. It's not clear today in Israel. You know why in Israel there is no equality? Not because of us. Because of women's status, or lesbian communities. You know, we were sitting in 2006 in the debate in the Justice Committee to talk about constitution. And the ultra-Orthodox parties were sitting in the, you know, we were sitting behind. Yeah, the debate is not with us in any case. And the ultra-Orthodox parties told the women organizations, the homo-lesbian organizations, the Reform Jewish organizations, if you think that there will be equality in the constitution, there will be no constitution. And we don't have constitution. But we don't have equality also in any basic law in Israel. There's no equality. So this is the reality. This is the reality that have been for 70 years. The reality of occupation, the reality that, you know, the Israeli government today is telling the international community, we really don't care what you say and what you do. So we are here to tell you, we want to see that you do care. Okay? In this sense, we met with many people. We prevent meeting with the administration. We didn't thought that there is anything useful in meeting the administration these days. So we went to meet with politicians. The first round was to convince the Democratic Party. You know why? Because like 10 years ago, everybody celebrated the chosen guy, Obama, that I think most of you voted for him. And we hope, you know, we had like huge expectations that Mr. Obama will not sacrifice the rights of the Palestinian minority in Israel in his power. But, you know, a few weeks after the election, we met with the National Security Council team with a draft of the strategy paper of the White House. And we were reading there, Jewish state and rights for all its citizens and a Palestinian state. We told the guys, you know, Habaibi, you know, African-American, you say Jewish rights, Jewish, you know, collective rights. You know, it's like African-American rights. And then you say rights for all its citizens? What? We are rights? Why there is no collective rights of the Palestinian minority if you are going to two-state solution? So in the end, like the gentlemen, they were in the door out, and you know, you can sit here, join us. Thank you. But they told me something like, maybe you don't like it, but you will never get better than this. We didn't get better than this. The Palestinians didn't get better than this. And, you know, a few weeks before, no, it was actually half a year before the election. Here, we met with Samantha Power. She was the American ambassador in the UN in Jerusalem. And I was very angry. I told her something like, you missed the whole 8 years. You didn't do anything, not for peace, not for minority rights. She's like, she came also from, I think she's here, actually. Yeah, she's teaching here. So I was very angry. I think she still remembers this conversation. We were five people. She still remembers this conversation. I told her, frankly, that the Democratic Party actually didn't understand the historical moment that they have. And today, we have midterm election, and in 2 years, hopefully, you will do better than the last election. And we will get a new administration. And we have to ensure that minority rights will not be sacrificed. So if you vote in the election and you have senators and members of the Congress on behalf of the Palestinians in general, on behalf of the Palestinian community in Israel, we need you to ensure that nobody will sacrifice our rights as a minority that nobody hears about. You know, we don't have embassies to talk on our behalf. The maximum that we can get is people, committed people like the guys that organized this event, to open doors for us and to tell you the truth that we want to live with the Jews. Don't tell anyone. We don't want to throw them to the side. We, the Palestinians in Israel, in a few weeks, in a few, you know, like in the next half a year, we would find ourselves in confrontation with the state authorities. Because this is what they are designing. law to implement home demolition, the Kamenetz law, was approved a year ago. This law, hostility in the streets, you know, atmosphere that you don't know how it will end. I went to pick up my kids from demonstration in Haifa in May 18. I ended, you know, some people know me in Israel. I ended in the jail with my children with a broken knee, beaten by police in the police station. And then everybody in Israel giving different stories of how my leg was broken. It was a big joke. Not for me. But like people were telling, you know, like, what's going on here? You arrest a human rights defender, you beat him, you attack him inside the police station. You have documentation of all of the process until he was taken in a police car. My children was beaten, and he was 21 people were attacked in the police station. This is a country that is going to fascism. Okay? And we have to protect ourselves. This country is going to demolish tens of houses in the near future, not only in Al-Khan al-Ahmar, but also inside the Green Wall. And we will need to protect ourselves, and we may find ourselves in a reality like October 2000. And we are here to alert also the Republicans. We don't want to sacrifice ourselves. We don't want to be victims of home demolition. We don't want to be victims of human rights violation. Help us to prevent that in between now and the Israeli election. Because the last election wasn't about anything serious. It was even between some elections in Israel in the last 20 years were between Sheldon Adelson and Yisrael Hayom and Moses' family and Yedioth Ahronot. Imagine. It wasn't about the occupation. I think this law will give us the opportunity for first time to go for the election in Israel on principle issues. Do the Jewish Israelis want to live in a state of occupation, discrimination? Okay? Or they want to live in a state that will end the occupation and build peace, will end the discrimination and will build solidarity between communities? Equality, it will be part of its future, and democracy will be part of its vision. These are the issues that I think we, as Palestinians inside Israel, are able to go to the next election and put it on the table of the Jewish public in Israel. Where you want to go? This ongoing status quo. They legislate, they occupy, they surround Gaza, they build walls, and it's going on. It has to be dealt with. And I think everybody here, from the Jewish Americans to African Americans and Latin Americans, have to take responsibility. I was happy. I was in Virginia, and we met there in a reception with a group, and I was happy to listen to senators and members of Congress that they were proud that they have been in Dallas Airport when these flights came, and they were making this whole demonstrations in front of these airports against this whole Obama decision to prevent refugees and to prevent people, to ban people from certain countries to come.
Trump.
I start to mix between them. It's not politically correct, I know. But in any case, they were proud. You know, we have racial profiling in Israel. We have, you know, weekly, every day racial profiling. And it's about time that Israel will decide, you know, Israel didn't have worse than September 11th. But Israel have to decide the humiliation of people in the Israeli airports, it's political decision, it's not security. The security situation here was much worse than the security situation that was in the Israeli airports. So it's a political decision with the equipment that exists today. They don't need racial profiling, but they do it to humiliate us, and they did this law to humiliate us and to kill the dream to be equals. So thanks for coming. I think Nabila will do better job than my job. And in any case, we are looking for the opportunity to talk to you and think with you, because after this visit, we are going to Chicago tomorrow and then to Los Angeles and then to San Francisco, and we need your networks. We are building a database, we are building a networks, and we want to talk to people. We want to talk to people that you elect, and we want them to hear our voices, so help us to do this. Tell us how to do the best job, and help us to do it with African Americans, Jewish Americans, Arab Americans, Latin Americans, everybody that care about the human rights. And I think there is a lot of people. I don't know why it's not translated usually in the election. I hope that you will do better than us when it comes to the the midterm election. In any case, we have huge expectations from the results of the midterm elections, and we hope that you will be able to do better job than the one that we did in the last election. Thank you.
Good evening. This law came not by chance. It is a gradual process that we've been struggling against inside Israel. We have in the last, since 1948 actually, we were a community which is was the infrastructure of all the Palestinian community inside Israel was destroyed in 1948. And we were under military rule until 66. And and we began survived the Nakba, the disaster of the Palestinian Palestinian history. We developed our infrastructure. We developed our organization, and we developed our work within the State of Israel. And we have a powerful, organized community united in the political platform. In terms of we had the United List that have 13 seats in the parliament. We are the third power inside the parliament, so we are a big community and organized and powerful community. We moved from being marginalized community to a community that is empowered, that is organized, and that has a lot of problems internally, but we are struggling against it. Jaffer was telling you about this law and the elements of the law. I think that the law has the impact not only in our life and our daily life, it has an impact about the whole future of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Because when you say that the principles, three principles in the first, and it is a basic law. In Israel, there is no constitution. Basic law are actually influencing all other laws. So if we have even some laws that don't mention the Jewish state, now we have a law that can be interpreting all other laws in that sense. And in fact, we have already some cases in the court that are using the law before the state developed the meaning of that law. One of the court decision lately was using this law to give more compensation to a Jewish injured person because he is a Jew. And this is in the court. This is happening today before the setup of the law, what it will mean. And so we can expect in all fields the implementation will be very bad. So what we're doing? In the past, this law actually set the line for what was already implemented inside Israel. When we speak about segregation of housing, it was already implemented. When we speak about policy of settlements, it was already implemented. And everyone was saying settlement is obstacle for the peace process, and no one cared. The continuation of the settlement continues. In the whole years, not a single Arab village was built for the Palestinian, although we went from 150,000 population who were able to stay in after 48 to more than a million and a half of the population. We are 20% of the population inside Israel, but most of you, most of the public in the state doesn't hear about us. We are not of existence. We are visible, invisible in Israel as well as in the... So one of the things that we decide to do is not to be invisible anymore. And this trip, we have in the same time different groups going around in different places to bring our voice out and to say that we can, we will not live with this loop. The language issue, as Jaafar said, before that, the stat, although we have official language, but the status of the Arabic language was very, very bad. Our children, when we speak about our children, in 1992, we began looking at the children literature in the center that we are working with. And we find that we don't have quality children books for our children. And we don't have any children books or any material that celebrate our heritage and our national identity and our tradition and our culture. Like when we have these we looked at the books for children from birth to three. And we always say if the children don't eat the book, they won't read it. It has to be from the very beginning. And normally we say that these books should be out of the tradition, that so that the children can read them before they read the words, so that they have this pictures in these books should be from the tradition. So one of the things that we were looking at, we find that most of the children books are printed in Pestalozzi Verlag from Germany, coming to the market without any connection to our culture. So we decided to create these books in our center. And the first book that we did was about me and my food. And we presented for the child a children book with foods that are from our culture. Manoushi, kousa wara, khubzou lebani. That's the traditional Arabic food that are representing our culture. And that the children could read, could identify, could see that this is something from their heritage, from their housing. That was the beginning of our children literature. Today, this year, we produced a series of books around the destroyed villages. And we call it Quran al-Baqiya Fina, the villages that are staying with us. And it is a three book story books. That is, one is the Fisher of Bassa, the second is the poet from Birwi, and the third is the painter from Sajara. Of course, the poet from Birwi is Mahmoud Darwish, and the painter from Sajara is Najil Ali. And we present them as children books, as quality children books with wonderful drawing, with a beautiful scene. And the issue is to make the children, our children, connect emotionally to these stories. I mean, with children, you can't speak about history. You can't speak about the destruction of the village. They won't understand it. But when the village names will be part of their life, they will ask the question. And it is about them, the mother and the father and the family, to discuss, to inform, to make a visit for these villages, and we still can visit these villages. So this kind of work that we did was about our existence, about our identity. And we did a lot of other resources that are related to our culture. We had, for example, one is about plants. We know in our the Palestinian identity is, when you look and you ask in workshop and what combine this identity. How come I am a proud Palestinian? How could I be a proud Palestinian when I was born in Israel. I was born in 1955. So I was born in, and I went to school in Israel. The schools in Israel don't speak about us, don't present our culture, don't present our history. So how come I am Palestinian? And we asked this question, and we identify that there are different elements that are combining our history and building constructing our identity. One of them is our experience with the plants. Plants we eat, we drink, we have them as a treatment, we have them as food, we have them as basic food in our kitchen. So it is one of the elements, of course. There are different other elements, but this one, for when we want to make it concrete for our children, we need to present these kind of experiences. And the today experience with planets, when my mother used to take us to the mountain to collect our za'atar, today we are not allowed to collect the za'atar, because za'atar became to be a product that a kibbutz is planting and selling, and za'atar was put in the list of the plants that you are not under protection. Now za'atar in its component, you have to understand, za'atar itself can't live if you don't collect it. It won't. If you don't cut it, it doesn't grow in the same way as it is. And when we're speaking about sustainable development, I always say my mother taught me the sustainable development. When we went to collect the za'atar, she said, "Don't cut it from the cut only the pieces that." She was looking for the next year to come back and to find the za'atar. So when you put the za'atar under control, under protection, you are actually putting the za'atar for destruction. Nothing about the... And you go today to some of these places where the za'atar grow still, and you will see that the za'atar went back, that it's weak, it's not anymore. So we're speaking about the reality of this law. The implication of this law has been a policy that we are struggling against, and we are fighting against, and building our own alternative direction. The direction is for life. Our direction is for loving this life and loving this country and loving our heritage. Because we believe that if you are a proud Palestinian, only when you are a proud Palestinian, you can be in any connection with any other. You can't accept the others without accepting yourself. There is no coexistence without the existence. There is no possibility for respecting the others and the difference of the others when you don't respect yourself, and when you don't respect your heritage, and when you don't respect your identity. The only, because I am proud Palestinian, I can be in communication with my friends in the Jewish community, and we can look for common struggle, and we can look for common interests, and we can build a better future for all. This is actually what it's all about. And this is, today, we are in a new level. We are in a new level. So the struggle against this law brought us in the new level. It doesn't mean that all the other challenges are per se. The challenges are still and continue, and we have to continue struggling, but we have to look for new possibilities. One of the possibilities that Shafer was mentioning is the fact that the international advocacy, we have been working on international advocacy for years. Like in the women organization, we have been, since 1997, we have been writing a shadow report about the status of Palestinian women inside Israel and presenting it to the CEDAW Commission since the first report that Israel reported. Israel have the ratified the CEDAW convention, and as ratifying, they are obliged to present a report for the commission of the CEDAW. So in 1996, we knew that Israel had presented a first report about the status of women inside Israel. That report, that first report, was about 14 pages about the status of the women in Israel. 14 pages, and we were not mentioned in that report, except for two sentences, one for being Christian and one it's for the Muslim, and it was used, the fact this diversity within the community was used to accuse us of the fact that there is the bad condition of the Palestinian woman. So we decided to write a shadow report, and we began with coalition that began to write. We needed resources. 1997, there wasn't resources about the Palestinian women. We had to be our researcher. To research. It's not like today we have a lot of new scholars that are interested in the Palestinian community and that they write and they publish. At that time, we didn't have the resources. So we have ourselves to begin researching and writing the shadow report. Our shadow report became a book, and Israel knew that we are organizing, so they withdraw their first report from the commission, and they didn't brought that report, and they asked a scholar from Tel Aviv University, Bar Ilan University at that time, to write a new report. So I always say to my feminist friends, the Jewish friends, it is because of our struggle you have a better report. That's real. That's real. That's a real story. And I'm sharing with you a real story. Until today, every five years, whenever Israel is writing a report, we as a coalition write a new shadow report. The latest shadow report that we have was in November 2017. We were presenting our report in Geneva. We were together there with Haredi women, with Palestinian women from West Bank and Gaza, and from Rahman Institute for about personal status law. They have a shadow report about the personal status law inside Israel, and we have our report, which cover all the issues that we are facing as Palestinian. And we, as Palestinian women, we are facing normally three types of discrimination. One as part of the national minority inside Israel, one as part of the woman inside Israel, and third as in our conservative society and our roots. But normally, 20 years ago, I wrote something about the Palestinian woman, and I said we are on the 10th level of priorities inside Israel. After the Ashkenazi man, Ashkenazi woman, Sfaradi man, Sfaradi woman, Russian man, Russian woman, Ethiopian man, Ethiopian woman, and only then we are the Palestinian man, Palestinian woman, we are in the. So any decision inside Israel already before this law was so hierarchical divided. So today there will be a legal status for this hierarchy, and this hierarchy is going as Ja'far had when I shared that in one of the meetings, he told me yes, but there is also the today the asyl and the asyl groups inside Israel and the foreign worker inside Israel. That's another complication for the situation. But when we speak about second class citizen, we in this law we are a third class citizen, because now after the law was established, there was the Druze community inside Israel had decided that they are injured, and they have a big demonstration in Tel Aviv. So the state looked at the issue, and they are trying to adjust some of the law to give them a special status for all the people who serve in the army. So this will be the second class, and we are the third class officially. But in my feminist perspective, as I said, we are not on the third class, we are at the 10, at 10, at the 10 class. So, in this situation, I mean, I'm here not to say we are hopeless. I'm here not to say that, I always say the helplessness or is a feeling for the privilege. The giving up, standing and saying there is nothing to do is a privilege position. We are not in a situation of privilege. As Palestinian inside Israel and as Palestinian as a whole, we can't be giving. We can't give up. We have to continue struggling, and our struggle now reach up for the political leader, and we join in the advocacy. The new step is that the United elected
the joint list
has been participating in the advocacy effort in Europe, and they are Jamal Zahalka was here also and is part of another delegation that is going on in the or went into the state. I think he went back. So we are continuing the efforts of advocacy. We have accumulated a lot of experience in international advocacy, and we are using these abilities to change the situation and to bring our voices out. We are here to say we have a voice and we have issues that should be on the table, and we are here to present this voice. And please, please, take our voice with you, and in any connection to the Palestinian issue, to Israel and Palestine, you have to take into consideration that there is 20% of the Palestinians who are struggling for a better future inside Israel. We build networks. We are currently building networks. This is the only possibility for us, is to build these networks and continue struggling. In the big demonstration that we have in Tel Aviv, we have about more than 30% of the participants were Jewish who were struggling against the law. In the law, the law was passed, this national state law was passed with 62 members out of 120, and 55 were against the law. This is that means that we can still look for new venues, new possibilities of networking, of cooperation, of changing the situation. And if the law doesn't change, we hope it will change. If the law doesn't change, we will continue building our strategies and our community and our identity, and keep us as active citizens, active Palestinians, active for peace, active for human rights, active for women rights, and this is our way out in the future. Thank you.
You have been listening to Jafar Farah from the Massawa Center in Haifa and Nabila Espanioli from the Al Tafula Women's Center in Nazareth. And that is our program this morning. Thank you for listening to This Week in Palestine, a weekly feature of Truth and Justice Radio. You'll find us here at 90.3 FM every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. You can also stream us live on your computer at wzbc.org. We thank you for your time, and we hope you will join us again next Sunday and every Sunday for another edition of This Week in Palestine. This is your host, John Roberts, wishing you a good morning.